my eyes tonight.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Eko se.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
Sitting at home with all these words spinning around in your head,
or in agony all night while you're commiserating with your friends. This ain't no mystery. Oh baby, can't you see? You show me you and I'll show you.
Feathers are miraculous structures, especially the long, strong feathers of a bird's wings and tail that make flight itself possible. But after about a year, constant use and exposure to the elements mean they have to be replaced. So, how do you replace the roughly 20 feathers in each wing that are essential to flight without becoming earthbound? Many birds molt a few flight feathers at a time, wait until new ones grow in, molt another few, and so on. Usually the same feathers on each wing at the same time, symmetrically. So in summer, a raven that's molting might look a little ragged in the same part of each wing. For ravens, a molt can take up to 6 months. For smaller birds, closer to 2. But, crucially, they can still fly. Water birds like ducks and loons, though, are too heavy to fly with even a few feathers missing. So they molt all their flight feathers at once, becoming earthbound and especially vulnerable to predators for a month or more. During this time, they stay in or very close to the water and out of harm's way until their full suite of feathers has been completely restored. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
This is a CHY News Update. The VIU Palestine Solidarity Encampment still stands at Vancouver Island University's Nanaimo campus, despite receiving a trespass notice ordering protesters to vacant by 8 a.m. this morning, July 15th. CHY was on the scene for a protest organized by the encampment beginning at the 8 a.m. deadline. Around 50 people were at the protest, where the Students for Palestine Committee read a statement outlining their intentions to continue with the encampment. The committee says they are committed to standing in solidarity with Palestine.
As you know, VIU has threatened our students with RCMP arrests, as well as an injunction and damages against select students. The deadline given was an hour ago, July 15th at 8 a.m.
The committee says VIU is villainizing protesters rather than engaging with them. They say student protesters have no choice but to continue fighting in solidarity with Palestine.
We have seen the most horrific of acts being done against Palestinians. Deaths of men, women, and children in ways that are unspeakable.
The committee says since October, they have been calling on the university to call for an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Palestine, along with 7 other demands.
We have tried through countless petitions, protests, sit-ins, and emails, and the administration has been ignoring their own students. The most appalling part is that our demands are the most basic demands of all and require close to no effort from Vancouver Island University.
They say their commitment is to justice for Palestinians and say they do not have any interest in what they describe as petty fights with the university's administration. In a statement from VIU posted at 4 p.m. on July 15th, the university says they have a deep sense of disappointment in reporting that the encampment is still standing. The encampment is calling on supporters to contact several members of the VIU administration. VIU says 2 of the numbers people are being urged to call are associated with VIU security and are for emergencies only. VIU states, quote, "Tying up these phone lines unnecessarily puts our community at risk in critical situations that demand immediate attention," end quote. VIU says they ask those contacting the numbers to refrain from doing so, unless there's a genuine emergency. In the statement, VIU says they remain committed to fostering a safe and inclusive environment and respect the right to peaceful protest and expression. However, as the encampment continues to have a presence on campus, VIU says it has to, quote, "take further action to uphold the university's policies and ensure the safety and well-being of our campus community," end quote. VIU says they retained external counsel and have commenced a court action in the Supreme Court of British Columbia to seek, quote, "injunctive relief and damages from the encampment participants," end quote. The notice of civil claim filed July 15th, obtained by CHY, lists 8 defendants along with all unknown people operating as a VIU Palestine Solidarity Encampment. 5 of the defendants are listed as VIU students. 1 is listed as a former student applicant, and two are of unknown identity to the university. In their statement, BIU says the decision was not made lightly, but was necessary to ensure that the university can operate effective and the, quote, campus remains a safe and welcoming place for all, end quote. BIU states they're committed to supporting students and staff and continue to encourage constructive and respectful dialogue. As of 5 p.m. on July 15th, the encampment still stands. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you.
This is a CKTZ News Update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. On June 28th, an entangled humpback whale was spotted off the coast of Campbell River near Century Shoal. The entangled humpback is thought to be a three-year-old named Vector, and the whale was entangled in a rope thought to be fishing gear. This news comes on the heels of a project on Cortez, a beach cleanup that took the course of June for the entire island to collect marine waste off of the beaches and coastlines. The results of that collection program this year were 32 cubic yards. I caught up with the services coordinator, Stephanie Vidal, of the Comox Valley Strathcona Waste Management to find out more about these cleanup programs.
So what is your position at the Comox Valley Waste Management?
So I am the services coordinator. So I work with our transfer stations, recycling depots, and landfills, but I also assist with our community projects. So the Ocean Legacy Depot, the community cleanup events, as well as Earth Week events, illegal dumping. It's a pretty broad scope.
So you were involved with the Cortez Island beach cleanup.
That's correct. Yeah. And we did that in conjunction with Ocean Week. So a lot of what we collect off the beach are items like oyster basket, buoys, foam floats. So Ocean's Day is June 8th. And so we were on Cortez for the 8th and the 9th. And we had already been on Quadra the 1st and the 2nd.
What other projects in the region like that occur for the Strathcona Comox Valley regional area?
We have programs on Hornby and Denman, but the majority of the material right now is coming from industry as well as Quadra. A large portion of funding comes from the Clean Coast, Clean Waters grant program, which is a government issued grant. And so we've had a number of successful recipients in the district who have done their cleanups independently of the CS service.
So I'd love to hear some numbers, either collectively or individually, on these projects. How much marine waste is being collected? And is this over the course of a month, like the Cortez Island beach cleanup? Or get an idea if this is an annual volume?
So last year, we did a soft start on Cortez. And we actually collected 1,010 kilos, just over one metric ton. This year, for our Cortez cleanup, we collected just over 32 cubic yards of material. As far as the entire district in 2023, and this is all of the cleanup volume as well as the industry volume, we collected just over 96 tons. So 96,560 kilos.
That's for
2023.
Oh, that's for 2023. Okay.
Of that material that was specific to beach cleanups, the volume was 78,009 kilos. So there's almost 20,000 kilos that's being brought in by industry partners. And that's aquaculture businesses who are recycling their own materials.
Okay, so aquaculture, fishing, that's all fishing industry. They're collecting their own marine waste.
They're either collecting their own or they have broken aquaculture materials that they're bringing in for recycling, like old rope, netting, broken oyster baskets, and foam floats.
And for 2023, what was that volume that the industry brought in?
So the industry specific material was 17,600 kilos. So just over 17 and a half tons.
Okay. And of the other, it looks like that would be, so 78,960 came from the beach cleanup separately. Is that material being sorted as to what it is, the nature of it, or is it possible that of that waste, there's also fishing industry and aquaculture waste in those loads?
So I would say the majority of the 78,960,000 kilos is aquaculture gear.
Okay.
We do get a lot of tennis balls and shoes, but those make up a minor portion of the volume. And it's all material that is sent to the Ocean Legacy facility on the mainland for recycling. So it is material that is staying out of landfill.
So where does all the recycled material, where does it go? Where is its journey after it's collected? If it doesn't go into the landfill, where does it go?
So it goes to the Ocean Legacy facility on the mainland, where the majority of it is chipped into pellets. And there's some great resources on the Ocean Legacy website and the Ocean Legacy Plastics website that show you what the material is being transitioned into. So they're making things like Lush Valley cosmetic containers for their specific brand. They're making benches and lumber. So it's becoming a bit of a circular economy for us, where these products that are residual and wash up on the beaches are then able to be reprocessed into other materials that can then be further recycled again and again over time.
Is there anything else that you want to add about the marine waste?
So I think for our service area in particular, because we do have a lot of coastal communities, this program is really important because it provides a larger benefit. It increases tourism because we're keeping our district clean. It also provides some opportunity to increase the landfill lifespan. So a lot of people, I'm sure, are aware that the landfill in Campbell River is closed. It's now a transfer station. And so all of the waste within our service area goes to the Comox Valley landfill in Cumberland. And so it's really important to try and divert as much as possible from landfill so that we don't end up a community that has to ship our waste out of district. So this program is very important for many reasons.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
You lie, don't break me down. up your mind when love don't already die. So for me now your design, oh. You said you need a little time, but you taste just fine, oh my.
Slow it down till the time stops, oh.
Here's your QCCR News Update. I'm Rick Conrad. Drag Queen Story Hour made its fabulous debut in Liverpool on Thursday as part of Pride celebrations on the South Shore. The event, dubbed Reading with Royalty, featured Rouge Fatale, one of Nova Scotia's best-known drag performers, and drag king Rhett Toracle. They were at the Thomas H. Rattle Library to read to and sing along with kids and their parents, grandparents, and others. A couple of hecklers stood outside the library and yelled insults at Rouge and Rhett as they entered the building. The women later came into the library to watch. Staff had to ask one of them to leave after she appeared to be taking photos of the crowd. Still, about 20 people showed up to listen to Rouge and Rhett read from such books as My Shadow is Purple, Bathe the Cat, Julian is a Mermaid, and The Hips on the Drag Queen Go Swish, 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 which was also one of the sing-alongs. Here are some sounds from the afternoon and reaction from those who were there.
Hello, welcome! I'm delighted to introduce Rhett Toracle here to my left. Rhett has been performing for over 9 years in Halifax and around, and we are so happy to have him here with us today. Loves all things rhinestones and mustache. Fabulous mustache happening today. And we also have Rouge Fatale, who has been performing for more than 20 years all across Canada, and actually did the first Drag Queen story time in Halifax a long time ago. I have photos of my
Hi, folks. We are so excited that we get to be here with you all today. My first book I'm going to read is called My Shadow is Purple, and this is by Scott Stewart, and it was My Dad Has a Shadow That's Blue as a Berry, and My Mom's is as pink as a blossoming cherry. So there's Mom and Dad doing their thing, making some dinner. My shadow is purple. My shadow loves playing with all sorts of toys. Things loved by girls and things loved by boys. So we've got some squishies and we've got some trucks and princesses and superheroes.
The more we read together, 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 the more we read together, the happier we'll be. 'Cause our books are your books and your books are our books.
The hips the on the drag we go
swish, 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 swish. Swish, 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 the hips on the dragon go swish, 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 all through the town.
That was our last story. I want to say thank you so much to
Thank
Rick.
You.
Thank you all for coming.
Logan Beaton. Oh, it was great. It was our first one. Yeah, it was pretty much what I expected. And yeah, the girls liked it. And, oh, well, my wife told me that it was happening, and you know, school's out. looking for things to do, and it seemed like something fun to do. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like they had a good time. So, yeah, if they come back, we'll be back.
Tina Thorburn. Well, we wanted to bring the kids out to meet new people. The kids need to know that everybody around is loved and everybody can be who they want to be. I loved it. They were great and very energetic. Keep the kids involved, and I think the kids will learn and ask questions later. I don't see any reason why not to. It's the same as going for somebody else reading. There's no difference. And I think the kids need more exposure to people in the neighborhood. I'm here with my granddaughter, Elizabeth, and my grandson, Gregory.
I loved it. It was really cool. It was all about loving and sharing and all that stuff. My favorite part was the songs. My favorite story was My Shadow is Purple.
And what are you doing now?
I'm trying to make a poster with a cat eating nachos with the nacho sauce.
My name is Rouge Fatale, and I'm a drag performer. I've been doing it for over 20 years, and I'm originally from Cape Breton, and now make home in Halifax. This is the very first one ever in Liverpool, so we got to break the mold down here, and it's very exciting. Why wouldn't we? This is so important. I got to do one of the very first drag queen story hours in Nova Scotia, and just to be able to see it coming to all the towns in and around this province, it just makes me so happy. Oh, in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, we'd be back every time they ask. This is pretty much what we do. We read, we sing some songs, we act silly, we get a good giggle, and then we get to do some arts and crafts and talk to the kids and listen to what they have to say. And it's so important because, you know, we show these kids imagination and, like, dress up and happy, and you know, we get to add a nice little moral at the end of it, and it's worth it. I think the kids had a great time. It sounded like they did. They answered questions, they got into it with us, and like, you know, it's a good sized crowd for the first go round. I'm impressed. I dance with the pinks as they turn and they spin, and play sports with the blues as they lose and they win. So there, they can dance, they're playing some soccer. Some of my friends think I'm simply confused, but the thing I love most is not having to choose. Some tell me I'm blue, because only blue can be strong. But my mom's strong too, so I think that they're wrong. Some tell me I'm pink, because pink is most caring. But my dad always cries, and loving, and he's sharing. So there's Dad having a moment. It's okay.
Being emotional.
Nothing. You're allowed to have a moment. And there they are.
That's your QCCR news update. For more on this and other stories, please visit QCCRFM.com/news. I'm Rick Conrad.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When a disaster strikes, you might need to evacuate your home quickly, so it's important to pack a go bag full of essentials beforehand. But that does not mean you need anything fancy.
You don't need to buy the official, you know, space food emergency preparedness kits.
Nadia Wiggins is with Listos California, an initiative of the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. She says a go bag should have non-perishable foods like canned soup or oatmeal, along with drinking water or a water purifier. You should also pack photocopies of any important documents, such as your ID and insurance coverage. Print out a map of your neighborhood and highlight evacuation routes and places you might be told to go for support.
Somewhere where in an emergency, if I was told by firefighters, EMTs, or other personnel to evacuate my home, I know the way and I know how to get there without GPS, without my phone, without a car.
Other items in a go bag can include cash, a first aid kit, batteries, a flashlight, a blanket, and tarps or ponchos. As climate change brings more extreme weather, it's important to be prepared before disaster strikes.
I keep a small tote bag with these things. I put it in my trunk out of sight, and I still feel a lot of peace of mind knowing that I have the bare minimum in my car.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Radio Goethe. Modern German music at its best. Every Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This is Germany calling. This is Radio Goethe.